James chapter 2. Last week we looked at verse 8. Really, the 8 through 13 is a unit, and if I'd had time, we should have done all of it together. But we're going to try to tie it together, and we'll do 9 through 13. Let me read 8 through 13 as you follow along. If you really fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you do well. But if you show partiality, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. For whoever shall keep the whole law and yet stumble at one point, he is guilty of all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. If you do not commit adultery, but you do commit murder, then you have become a transgressor of the law. So speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. For the judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. The Ten Commandments can be divided into two halves. Of course, that would be five in each. And I think headed by what Jesus said when he said, love the Lord your God, and then love your neighbor as yourself. I believe that love the Lord your God is 1 through 5. Now, I know that number 5 is obey your parents. But aren't they God's representative? It may be that you can put that in the God category. And then love your neighbors yourself, 6 through 10. So I think that when Jesus said, put all them together and said, on these two hang all the law and the prophets, I think that's what he was saying. I want to remind us of a couple of verses, passages, that bear on this passage. And so let me read those. The first one is Romans chapter 13, verses 8 to 10, where Paul says to the Romans, owe no man anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, and here's a whole list of commandments here in the New Covenant, list of those Ten Commandments. You shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. But if there is any other commandment, they're all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. In 1 Corinthians 13, the great love chapter, he said, verse 4, love does no envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love. So love is a very large part of this section. Let me remind you of what Jesus said. We talked about this last week. Matthew 22, verses 37 to 40. A Sadducee, a lawyer, came to him and said, what is the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and with all your mind. That's the first and the great commandment. But the second one's like it, and that is, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, and on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So love is prominent here, but so is law. If you look at that passage, though in these verses, 8 through 13, the word law occurs in every verse except the last one, law. So love and law are not antithetical. They fit together in what James is trying to say. Last week we looked at verse 8, and let me remind you of a couple of things we said. In fact, I have a better outline, I think. It was a commendation in verse 8. He says, you do well if you keep the royal law. And we delineated the different names, the royal law, the law of liberty, the law of Christ, the law of faith, the new covenant. All those are names for it. And then we differentiated them, the royal law, from the Mosaic law. We said that the law had been done away. The Mosaic law had been done away. It's been replaced by the new covenant, Hebrews chapter 8. And the priesthood has been superseded, Hebrews chapter 7. And then we defined the chief requirement of the royal law, and that was love. If you love, he says, you do well. That's commendation. The word if there is assuming that. Assuming that you love, you do well. I say that because when we come to the next section, he has another if, same if. And he says, if, assuming that, but if you show partiality, you commit sin. Same if, assuming that you show partiality, you commit sin. And so we come then to this condemnation today in verse 9. And we see the prosecution of sin, if, assuming that, it's like a courtroom scene. There's an accusation, if you show partiality. Remember, we're going back to the verse where he says, remember when the rich man and the poor man came in? If you loved them, you did fine. That's commendation. But if you didn't, if you showed partiality, same word, by the way, receiving his face, if you receive the face of a person, then you have a problem here. That is sin. So when that happened in your church, which side were you on? Were you on the side of those who loved, or were you on the side of those who showed partiality? That's his point. So in this imaginary court, then, he wants to know where you're standing. If you showed partiality, then you are on that other side. And this is not looking way ahead. He's not looking at a later judgment. He's saying right now, in this imaginary court. Later on, he's going to talk in verse 12, he's going to talk about a judgment that's coming. But now, right now, you are one side or the other. Here and now, you're in this imaginary court, and you are accused. You're accused of showing partiality. Now, the evidence. Well, he says, you work sin if you do this. If you do that, if you show partiality, then you are, the word is commit in my version here, but it's the word work. You work sin. Now, I played on that word just a little bit. In several passages, if you'll follow with me, at least in your mind, Galatians 5, verses 19 to 21. Now, we'll come back to this verse later. But verse 19 of Galatians 5, he says this. Now, the works of the flesh. Works. The flesh has works. The Spirit has fruit. Fruit of the Spirit, but works of the flesh. And he lists those works of the flesh. The works of the flesh are evident. They are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contention, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambition, dissensions, heresies, envies, murder, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. But the fruit of the Spirit is something else. So the transgressor's work is hard. The life of the transgressor is hard. And sin is hard work, is what he's saying. Now, in Ephesians 5:11, he says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. And in 2 Thessalonians 2:7, he says, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. It's there. It's here around with us. And we don't want to be a part of that works, the works of the devil, the works called sin. And then there's a conviction. The conviction is he's called a transgressor. If you show partiality, you work sin, and you are convicted by the law as a transgressor. A transgressor is one who goes beyond, who goes over the line. And he's convicted by what law? By the Mosaic law? No. By this royal law. The law that says love, when a person doesn't love, that same law labels him as a transgressor, labels him as a sinner. So we are now, convicted by the law of royal law, the law of liberty, the new covenant, the law of Christ, whatever. We're committed by that, convicted by that, not by the Mosaic law. Then he has a comparison of sins in verses 10 and 11. In verse 10 he says, For whoever shall keep the whole law and yet stumble at one point is guilty of all. Now, if you commit one, you're guilty of all. It's what he's saying is that the law is a unit. What God says is a whole unit. And if you stumble at one of those, it's like a pane of glass. And I thought about bringing a pane of glass up here, and I couldn't bring myself to do it. But I would like to have done that, you know, and then take a hammer and just punch at one side, make a little hole. But when I've done that, I've ruined the glass, see? Now, it might shatter and all that. That's what I figured. It'd probably shatter. It wouldn't work. But it's true. That if you just make one little hole in a pane of glass, if you're living in zero weather, you don't want that pane of glass in your window, because that pane is ruined because of that one thing. And I think that's what he's saying. The law is a unit. If you stumble at one point, you're guilty of all. If you don't keep it all, you don't keep it at all. You know, you cannot keep the law unless you keep the whole law. Now, he also says here that one sin is just as much sin as another. Any sin makes one a lawbreaker. Doesn't matter what it is. He lists them. Remember, we read this thing. We listed all kinds of things. He put adultery right next to uncleanness. He put murder next to envy. Yeah, they're all there. And that's all a part of the law that convicts. Now, so any sin makes one a lawbreaker. I think that if we aren't careful, we'll get into that little thing of mortal sin and venial sin. No, that's not a biblical distinction. All sin is sin. Now, we slide into this by, well, murder and adultery, Christians wouldn't do that. Of course they would. Of course they do. Some. And not to say you should, but I'm saying that Christians can do that. Christians can murder. Christians can commit adultery. Right? But we say, oh no, Christians shouldn't do that. Christians can't do that. But then, jealousy, selfishness, ambition, envy, we condemn those, but we tolerate them. If somebody commits adultery, get them out of here. You can't be in fellowship with us. Do you know her? She's a gossip. What? He covets. He wants this or that. We kind of gloss over those. We say, oh, in our best moments, we say, oh, that's bad, that's sin. But we tolerate it. We don't throw them out of the church. Well, all I'm saying is that one sin is just as much sin as another. They're all listed together, as we read in Galatians chapter 5. They all break God's law equally, because God's law is a unit. One sin is just as much sin as another. And the same holy God said it all, is what he says. You know, the same one who said, God, don't commit adultery, also said don't murder. The same God said it all, whatever the law says. So, each sin, then, is a sin. And they all equal along with all other sins that you could mention. So, they all are spoken by the ultimate lawgiver. So, man, that is a downer, right? Man, who can keep it all? What shall we do? My goodness, we're lost. Well, we would be, except for the grace of God. What's the antidote? The antidote for sin is confession. There's a vertical confession to God. If we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So a confession is necessary, and confession is simply to say the same thing. That's what it means. Agree with God about sin. I have done this, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, none of your business. But I have come to God and said, I did that. I don't think it's all that bad. What? Who are you telling, you know? I really don't think it's all that bad. And eventually I had to come to say, it's sin. What's God call it? God calls it sin. And when I come to God to confess my sin, I call it the same thing He does. I say, God, this is sin. I did it. I confess that I did it. And He says, if we confess the sin, what does He do? He forgives the sin. Now, how public should the confession be? It should be as public as the sin. Now, that's why I didn't tell you what my sin was that I had a problem with there. None of your business. Because it's between me and God. It didn't hurt anybody else. It hurt me tremendously. And so as I talk to the Lord about this, I confess it, He forgives it. Nobody else needs to even be bothered with it. That's the vertical confession. But there's also a horizontal confession. Because if my sin affected someone else, if I hurt someone else by that sin, then I must make that right with Him. Now, I'm not saying that this will affect whether God forgives me or not. That verse doesn't say anything about it. It just says if I confess it, He forgives it. I believe that's the way it is. But there is also a horizontal confession that needs to take place. If I offend someone, then I must go to that person and confess that sin to that person and that person only. Doesn't that be public? And then I will be forgiven. Now, the sense that we ought to confess to others horizontally makes me wonder, is there some bearing on my confession before God and His forgiveness? And so I went to Matthew chapter 5, and I found something there that may bear on it, and that is, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and bring your gift. Well, that's not talking about confession of sin. So I don't think it's the same subject. And I know it's not the same dispensation. Mosaic law is different from the New Covenant. So I still think that that all 1 John is saying, if we confess, He forgives. Now, but there's still that fellowship, that unity that needs to be taken care of. So I need to confess it to the brother as well. Then notice there is also a forward dealing with the sin. I confess it to God. I confess it to anyone I've hurt. And then I forsake the sin. Forsaking is a big part of confessing. That is a big part of this whole process. Now I need to forsake it. I need to tell God, and I need to ask God's grace, ability to forsake the sin. But notice the order. If I confess, He forgives, and I forsake. And I believe that if we try to say, well, I'm confessing my sin, I know I've done wrong, now I'm going to forsake it, and then I'm going to go to God with it. No. I go to God. God, I confess, I sinned. And He forgives me. And because I'm forgiven, then I can forsake it. I don't go around with the cloud all over me, I'm going to try to forsake this if I can really forsake it. No, not that. God, this is what I did. You call it sin, I call it sin. And He says, I forgive you. And on the basis of that forgiveness, then I can forsake it. And I think I can't otherwise. So, we need to confess, be forgiven, and forsake. Now, in verses 12 and 13, it comes to a caution. We had a commendation, a condemnation, now a caution, verses 12 to 13. So speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy on the one who has shown no mercy, and mercy triumphs over judgment. Now, judgment. I gave you in your bulletin two handouts. One is a chart. One is some boxes. I got that from Brother Ryrie. I took probably 20 classes from him, college and seminary together. And this is out of the Ryrie Study Bible. If you have a Ryrie Study Bible, it's there in 1 Corinthians 3. is where you'll find it. But I copied it for you all, and I'm not selling it to you, so I think I have done no wrong. But that shows you some of the various judgments that are ahead of us. The place of judgment, what judgment will we attend? Well, it's not the sheep and goat judgments, that is the Gentile judgment, where he separates the sheep from the goats. That's the one that most people think about when they think of judgment. They think of one great judgment at the end. We're all headed out toward this one great thing, and then comes the one resurrection. Everybody's resurrected at the same time, and everybody's judged at the same time. A common fallacy from people who don't know the word. Plain and simple. There's one pastor, very prominent pastor in this city, who talks about the great assize. Comes way right out of Hodge theology or somewhere. The great assize, when we'll all come before God and all be judged there. The Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches that there are four judgments ahead, and Ryrie has several, like the angels and whatever, but four judgments ahead for people, and the one is the Gentiles, Matthew 24. Another is the judgment of the nation Israel. That's when Jesus comes back to the earth. Those two judgments take place on the earth. And there are believers and unbelievers at both of those. And they are separated one from the other, believers from the unbelievers, sheep from the goats, as the picture is. And then there's a third one that I have listed here, the great white throne judgment. That's in Revelation 20. And that has to do with all unbelievers of all time who stand before the Lord, and all of those go directly to hell. Okay. And then there's the one where we will be, and that is the judgment seat of Christ, 1 Corinthians 3 and 2 Corinthians 5. Now, I have a little chart here. This chart, you see all these U's here? These are unbelievers. All the unbelievers from Adam, even looks like before Adam, from Adam all the way through, will be resurrected at the second resurrection, and they will go to the great white throne, the J4 here, the great white throne judgment. Then there is the judgment of the believers, J1 here, when all believers of the church are resurrected, and they go to the judgment of believers. That's the one we're talking about. That's the where we will stand and be judged by that royal law. And there are these two here, the judgment of the Gentiles, judgment of the Jewish nation here at the return of Christ to the earth. If you can't see this, you can see it on your chart. So if you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to talk with you about it individually. But here's the one we're talking about. When the church is raptured, we go up, meet the Lord, go back to heaven, and there we are to be judged by that law of liberty, the royal law. Now, so he says, there is the place of our judgment is going to be in heaven before the Lord, the church together, all believers there, as opposed to the number four, the great white throne judgment, all unbelievers. Number two and three, at the return of Christ, both believers and unbelievers. Okay, and I think Ryrie's little chart there will help you. I hope you don't just take these home and toss them somewhere. Look it over. Look in your Bible and read the passages that are there. That'll be helpful to you. All right, now, so that's the place of judgment. The preparation for the judgment's in verse 12. So speak and so do. Well, that's what we have to do. Speak and do. We're going to be judged by the law of liberty. Not the Old Testament law, but by the law of liberty. And the pattern for judgment should also be our pattern for life, right? He said you're going to be judged by the law of liberty. What's the law of liberty? The royal law. Love one another. Right? That's the law that we're going to be judged by. If you had if somebody gave you a pattern and said, okay, I'm going to give everybody one of these patterns, and you're all going to make this item, whatever this item is that you have the pattern for. And I will judge which one is best by the pattern. So how are you going to make your thing, whatever that is? make it by the pattern. So get that pattern, and I'm going to make it just like this pattern if I can, because I want to win that prize. Well, if you use a different pattern, not going to work. You know, a lot of people, he says you're going to be judged by the law of liberty, by the royal law, by the new covenant. That's what you're going to be judged by. So how should you pattern your life? According to the Mosaic law? No. See? Hebrews chapter 12, verse 28. Therefore, let us hold fast to grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably. And you can't serve God acceptably by keeping the Mosaic law, but by keeping the new covenant, which is love one another. See? So he says, here's the pattern. You are to so speak and so do according to the law of liberty. In other words, don't show partiality, love one another, basically. So what are we to say? Well, we're to say to ourselves, first of all. See, what you say to yourself is very important. And, of course, that's thinking. Unless you do like I do sometimes, walk around talking to yourself. But you don't need to talk to yourself. You can think, you know. So what we say to ourselves is important. What we think, and that will be what we say to others. Because you say it enough to yourself, you'll say it to somebody else. And out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so speak to yourself. It's very much like Philippians 4, where he says, think on these things, and then you will do these things. You know? So think on these things. That's what we're supposed to think on. So say to ourselves, and also say to others. Speak to other people. It involves what we say about the rich and poor. Don't lose the context. What we say about the rich and the poor. What are you going to say about them? You're going to love one another? Or are you going to say, oh, the rich is good, the poor is bad? Each of us will have an influence on somebody else by what we speak. And then what we do. What we speak is going to determine what we do. Saying is not enough. We must do. So say it and then do it. So speak and so do. It's not just saying don't do the bad thing. That's the negative side. But do the good thing. Help them. So you say, well, they can come here. I'm not going to say anything against them. Or I can say, yes, they can come here and do nothing against them. I'm going to help them. I'm going to do all I can to help them in their need. And by the way, there are other needs besides money. The poor people, it may be poor in personality. You know, one of those porcupine personalities. You know, just back off every time you see it. They need help. They're poor in personality. They're poor in whatever, all kinds of poor besides money poor. And so not only do we not do something bad, we do something positive. Help them, work with them, because that's how we love them. And then he says we can have peace in the judgment. Verse 13, for judgment is without mercy. Remember, we're going to be judged future by the law of liberty. And that judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. And mercy triumphs over judgment. So the one who has shown mercy, the one who has loved the poor, who has not taken the received the face of someone, but has really tried to love them, as Jesus Christ said we are to do, the one who has done that, that person will be storing up mercy along the way. We can store up the mercy. And the more mercy we show, the more mercy we will get before the Lord. And not be ashamed before him, as 1 John says. And then we can also store up judgment. Because when we don't show the mercy, we are storing up judgment. And we stand before the Lord, and it's not going to be so much as he's saying, well, I think I'll decide this or this for you. No. Let's see how much you sent on ahead. You sent a lot of mercy on ahead. And so here's your stack of mercy. And you get this mercy. Right? Or you sent along a whole stack of judgment. And that's what you get. It's as though you designed your own judgment. Right? God doesn't have to design it. You design it. And that's what Paul talks about in works. The very same thing. That we are to, everything that we do will be piled up before the Lord, as the figure is, and then the fire of God's holiness will try it, and then will be judged and rewarded according to what's left. That's it. So, therefore, speak and do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. So, we've come a long way. Come a long way from where he said, the poor man came in, the rich man came in. How will we do that? It doesn't have to be somebody coming into the church. It's somebody who has a need, somebody who's poor, who needs our help. Love that person. Love the people, especially those of the household of faith. We have that responsibility and that privilege and then that reward at a later time.